you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast available exclusively on the Epic Games Store. It is December 13th, 2018. Today we've got a very special surprise for you that I won't spoil just yet. We've also got guest Jeff Keighley, who joins us to talk about last week's massively successful Game Awards, how we got all those big exclusive announcements, and whether he's actually getting any sleep. Plus we talk about Hades, Celeste, Overdin, Super Smash Bros., and many other games, as well as some off-topic chat and Kirk's music pick of the week. Shout out to Queen Bee. It's a good show. Let's go. And we are back for another episode. My name is Jason Schreier. I am the news editor of Kotaku.com, and I am joined by Kirk Hamilton, editor at large of Kotaku.com. Hello, Kirk.
Hello, Jason. It's so nice to see you again.
It is nice to be back for another week of podcasting. Kirk, can I read you a few emails before we start our episode today?
I love emails, and I would love it if you would read me some.
Okay, I'm gonna read about three emails. So I'm going to start with Aldo. This is from Aldo. Aldo says, man, Maddie has been constantly great as co-host guest on the podcast. She's very funny, gives interesting points of view on the topics, and always has this amazing energy that's actually contagious. It's been so fun that maybe she should get promoted as a podcast regular. And then here's an email from Chad. Chad says, seriously, when are you guys going to announce that Maddie is the third host of the podcast? She is incredible, and what she adds to the show is also incredible. Here's Nathaniel. Nathaniel says, hey, all, I love the podcast, and I just wanted to say how much I've been enjoying Maddie's co-hosting in Jason's absence. I wouldn't want to replace Jason, but I also wouldn't hate a three-host podcast.
Those are some interesting emails, Jason. It almost sounds as though people would like for us to add Maddie as a third host of the podcast. Like, what would you think about that?
I don't think that's a bad idea. In fact, I think it sounds pretty great.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a pretty good idea too. Maddie, what do you think of that?
I think it's a great idea, and I don't happen to be doing anything right now. So I think we should just go for it and record an episode and then also do that exact same thing every week forever for the rest of Split Screen's existence.
Which will be forever.
I think that's...
Of course.
I think that sounds great. Well, welcome aboard, Maddie. Welcome onto the show.
Maddie Myers is now a permanent, full-time, third co-host of Kotaku Split Screen. Thank you so much, Maddie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for honoring me with this invitation. I am really flattered by the emails and tweets that people have sent requesting this. I would never have expected people to want that, and I genuinely appreciate everyone who said that, because it is now happening by semi-popular demand. Also, I guess Kirk and Jason are okay with it. I don't know. It might just be the listeners.
I am certainly excited about it. I feel like every time we've had you on, and then additionally when you subbed for Jason, the show was just always more fun. And it is very fun with Jason. We have a good time. But then whenever you're here, I just feel like we've had a good time. So we kind of figured, let's have a good time
all the time.
We were thinking that we need someone who doesn't play Destiny to come on Kotaku Split Screen.
That also is a consideration.
But also, you guys could stop playing Destiny, and I could play only Destiny. That was another show format that we had discussed. So people can let us know what they think about that idea or any number of other...
We are fond of the gimmicks here at Split Screen.
All of us switching our gaming diets, which is a joke I made in Kotaku Slack recently that no one took me up on, but I still think is a funny idea.
That's we all just swap games.
Yeah, well, gaming diets are classic games that we each play. We make someone else... Anyway, no one's going to do it.
But, so, Maddie... To those people out there who might not know you, do you want to just like tell everybody a little bit about yourself? We know that you are a staff editor at Kotaku.com. You love Metroid. You love fighting games, correct? Mm-hmm, am I getting your bio right here?
You are getting my bio right. I've talked about it before on this show, but I used to work at the Boston Phoenix for many, many years. And then I worked a bunch of other weird jobs, including at Pace Magazine for a few years, the Mary Sue for a couple years, and then came here.
Yeah, Kirk also got his start at Pace, and I think my ever first freelance article was at Pace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of really cool games writing is still at Pace. It's a fun little spot. Mm-hmm. So that's my resume, I guess. Also, I like Metroid and Kirby, which is probably the only reason Stephen Totilo hired me. Just kidding. It's not why. I used to write about competitive games here mm-hmm. when we still had an esports section. And I used to play a lot of Counter-Strike when I was a teenager and fighting games and all that stuff. So I have a pretty different gaming diet from the two of you in some ways. I play a lot of games mm-hmm. that y'all don't play, which I think might be part of why this is an interesting trio of people.
Hold on. I just want to say for a second that even though you just said that, I'm looking at our run sheet right now, and there's a list that says games we're playing. And yours says Oberdin, Celeste, Hollow Knight.
I'm playing the games that need to appear or will appear on my Game of the Year list.
Right.
This month has been a little unusual for me. It has included some games that I did not get to because I was busy playing, you know, Dragon Ball, Tekken, BlazBlue.
Okay, cool.
Blue. We will debatable talk as to how that's pronounced.
Fantastic. This month has been the month when a lot of games journalists are frantically trying to get through Oberdin because they put it off until December and they're like, oh, wow, this game is amazing. We should probably play.
Yeah, I hope everybody has a chance to play that before it comes Game of the Year discussion time. Because, that should be a strong contender. It certainly is for our list and will be for our list, which I believe hits in January, right? So we got some time.
We got a little time.
So why don't we jump right in, speaking of games we're playing, and as always, so listeners out there, you'll have to give us a little bit to get our rhythm going with now that we're moving to three people.
We've never met each other before.
We don't know each other.
We're going to totally see how this goes.
We expect things to be pretty normal. We're still going to talk about games we're playing. We're still going to talk about news. We're still going to do interviews. It's just that now we have three co-hosts, and I think that it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to add an extra voice, a lot of more color and charm to the show. And Kirk and I are both really excited about this and have been planning it for a long time. So why don't we move right into the games that we are playing? And Maddie, as our newcomer, why don't we start with you? So we're going to talk about Smash in a little bit. So skip
we're
Smash
all
for
Smash.
Now.
We're all
yes.
playing
don't
Smash.
Worry. There's exactly. lots of Smash to talk about. First, why don't you talk about some of the other games that you've been playing?
Sure. So I played Oberdin. I haven't beaten it yet. I didn't realize how long it was somehow. It's long and complicated. Even as much as I read and heard about this game, it somehow still wasn't at all what I thought it was going to be, which was kind of fun.
Interesting.
It's more thinky than I thought it would be. I'm spending a lot more time sitting there looking at my book, my virtual book of clues that I'm collecting about this mystery, and just not even playing per se, but just literally sitting at my computer, staring off into space, thinking about information I have collected, which is a kind of game I really enjoy, but it just isn't what I thought it would be. So it's kind of board game-like in that way, because you're really just sitting there looking at a lot of sometimes very static images and just evaluating what little information you have in order to solve a mystery and trying to remember names and facts and like small pieces of information delivered to you in dialogue about each person who may or may not have been a murderer and why. I don't know. I think it's really neat. And I actually really like murder mystery games. I played that Sherlock Holmes game back in the day and Murdered Soul Suspect, which is a really weird game where you like
the ghost one.
Yeah, you like talk to ghosts about murders, which is sort of a similar conceit to Oberdin. Without spoiling too much, it's somewhat supernatural-ish. You have like a magical tool that lets you look at ghosts. And Murdered Soul Suspect is like a way cornier, weirder version of the story that has like actual cutscenes and 3D animations of them and so on. And Oberdin doesn't do as much of that. There is still that, but a lot of it is like looking at a book. So I don't know. I think it's really neat. And I'm excited to defeat it and learn who all of the murderers and murderees are.
it's nice when you finish it. It really just kind of ends, and it ends in this very almost unceremonious way of, okay, and now I'm done, yeah. Which is cool. And
Kirk, what did you think about all the musical stings? Did you ever get tired of them, or do you love them? I enjoy them. I was just curious what you thought.
I do. So those are composed by Lucas Pope, who just he's another one of these I did everything for the games kind of guys.
Oh.
I think some of the themes that he writes are actually a little bit clumsy. They're kind of like they lope along, but it sort of works for the kind of vibe that he's going for. And I love the music that plays when you open the book. It reminds me of 80 Days, actually, of the soundtrack for that game. It has this kind of, and now a journey into the world of fiction vibe, which is perfect for an animation of a book opening.
Yeah. I've grown to really enjoy the corniness of the like da da thing that happens like whenever you enter.
Oh, every single time it does it that when it's like,
constantly it, does
I like
it, yeah.
conduct along with it whenever we go into a memory.
It reminds me of like old school games that I enjoyed for like the Macintosh. Like I had like some sort of weird game that came with an encyclopedia that my parents had that you were like Leonardo da Vinci or something. And it had a lot of like really corny musical stings in it. And it's really taken me back to like a certain kind of game where not a lot happens, but you just kind of look at things. And anyway, it's a cool game.
I think that vibe, that part of it, the part that it comes out with you a lot, you spend a lot of time just sort of
sitting there.
Thinking. And it's funny.
Which is
so
I'm writing in a notebook.
Good.
Do you have a notebook?
So it sounds
that
like you and Jason both played it by yourselves. And so it's kind of a conversation between you and your notes. Where I played the game with Emily and we played together on the couch and we didn't take any notes. But because there were two of us, we were able to talk things through. And that was kind of the same thing. But we spent a lot of the game just sitting there being like, okay, so Deep V got shot on the front and then Tall Ball Guy was mad and he was in the boat and sort of just like talking about the game, which is sort of the same, like an external version of the internal process that you're talking about.
What else are you playing, Manny?
So I beat Celeste, which I don't know if...
Great game.
It's a great game. It's super difficult. And I know we're not supposed to admit if we ever change the difficulty settings in games, but that game has some really, really cool difficulty setting alterations that... I wanted to shout out because I did end up using some of them in order to get to the end of it.
Like, shout out to difficulty settings.
I think it's just really cool that they included such a comprehensive set of things you can change. I don't know if y'all ended up using those, but...
Isn't the messaging on that kind of also very, it's okay? Like, it's very not like that kind of, you know, you're a badass if you can do the hardest. It's much more gentle about it and sort of open.
It's very encouraging. They do still have a message that's like, this isn't really how we want you to play the game. I can't remember how they polite word it, but they're kind of like, you are going a little far afield by using these. And I was like, okay, game, but I would like to defeat you. And I could spend much longer on you and still defeat you, but I do want to finish this game before the end of the year. So I just thought it was cool that you can change a lot of different ways about how the game works. It's not just like a easy, normal, hard. It's like change how jumping works, change how different things you can do in the game work. And I really appreciated that. Also, the story in that game is really cool and minimal, but still something that you want to see to the end.
Yeah, I like when they came out at the Game Awards last year, and I think it was Matt Thorson, I think is his name, the lead designer of that game, who talked about how if it helped you. I think his message was, you guys didn't watch the show. The show, the Game Awards last week, he won something, maybe Best Game
Indie
for Change or something like that. And he got up on stage and he was like, obviously the game is a lot about mental health and mental illness and dealing with that. And he was like, hey, I just want you all to know that if this game helped you, then that came from inside of you and that was all you. And like, it was a really, really nice speech that he gave last week.
Also, speaking of games with really, really good soundtracks, that game has a really, really good soundtrack.
It so
really
does.
Cool.
One of my favorite songs is actually a pretty early level. It's like the ice level. And as you jump on the blocks of ice, it does the little ding that corresponds with the rest of the music in the game. I love when a game has like diegetic sounds as well
as what Portal did.
Platformers are really good at that, at having that music cues that are just tied to the rhythm. And you've also been playing Hollow Knight.
I have. I don't know if I will beat it.
I'm so excited about that.
But I'm really enjoying it.
Of course you'll beat it.
Well, but I mean not by the end of the year. I don't know. I'll try.
You can beat it whenever. Don't rush.
It didn't even come out this year.
I know, so it's not really a game of the year or not.
But I'm fighting for it.
We're going to debate about that. It came out on Switch this year.
Yeah.
And that's the version I'm playing.
It's such an interesting conversation because the game got so overlooked by critics and certainly by me and media people last year because it was on PC and everyone was like, oh, it's coming to Switch. I'll just wait for that because so many of us prefer playing games and especially platformer games on the Switch.
I feel like I've just seen people casually describing it as a 2018 game without even qualifying it in any way. Right. Like, I don't even think people remember that it came out in 2017.
Which is funny because it also kind of highlights the disconnect between us and the real world in some ways, because that game was, I think, actually very, very successful for them when
it was.
Came out on PC. Like, they sold a ton of copies and all of these people played it and loved it. But, like, the media sphere was, like, just a little slow on the uptake. I think partly because some people were like, oh, it looks cool, but I can tell it's a 60-hour game. I'm going to play it on Switch.
Exactly.
And other people just missed it.
It's a pretty good fit for the Switch.
I want to know what you make of it. How far are you?
Well, I don't know how far I am. And it's also like one of these games where you can kind of run past a boss if
you want to, and just keep exploring.
What region are you in?
I don't know. Everything looks the same still, so I probably haven't gotten to the underground area.
There are bugs.
There are bugs around. Everything's gray and very, very beautiful and intricate. People say spooky poems and songs to me while standing morosely in temples. I've gotten a lot of the like unlockable, like, so now I know where all the benches are. That was really helpful. And like where shops are and stuff like that. Like once I bought those things, it got a lot easier for me to tell where I was. Until then, I was like, oh boy. I've gotten lost in this game a lot.
It kind of makes navigation part of the game, and you have to listen for the guy and kind of unlock the map as you go. So there's
I remember I told you, Kirk, at first I was like, I hate this map system. I hate you have to go find the map guy. And then as I played more, I was like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah. And I think I've gotten to a point where at least the starting area, which is huge. I don't know how to describe the part of the game I'm still in.
The Forgotten Crossroads, I think. Sure. That's the opening area. Yeah.
Sure. But I feel like I know where everything is there now because it has the Metroid-esque quality of you play and replay and you keep, you know, collecting more insect eggs or whatever those little things are that I'm knocking everybody out to get. And I do like that. I always like that in Metroid games, you always have a way to like get more health and stuff. If you're not good or whatever, you can always just like keep circling back to the same place and finding more things and exploring. And I like games like that. I don't know. It's a fun game. It does feel really big, though. And Cecilia and I were talking about how she was kind of turned off by it because she didn't ever really get past the feeling lost phase of it, which I think is a pretty big hurdle. And as a number one Metroid defender, I do feel like Super Metroid does a really good job of making you not feel lost and feeling like there's a lot of signposting for what you're supposed to do next. Hollow Knight, it's a little more opaque sometimes. There are some situations where I'm like, I can tell I'm going to get something that I can use to get to this next area, but I'm not entirely sure what direction to go. I'm just going to kind of try a few different alleyways or whatever until I find it, and then I eventually do, but it's been kind of slow going.
Yeah.
I don't mind that, but it is... I don't know. It's potentially a flaw with the game.
I think that the opening hours of that game resist you a little more than they should, especially because when I was playing it anyway, there was a point maybe 7 or 8 hours in, and you'll know when you get there. It sounds like you're not there yet. You get to a few new areas, and you just start to the game opens up in a very kind of dramatic way, and suddenly
I don't think I've
at
hit
least
that.
I think it's when you get the first traversal ability or like the second traversal ability.
Yeah, I mean, I can't actually like exactly put my finger on it. There are a couple of traversal abilities you get, you find the Mantis Village, you kind of go to a few places, and then suddenly it's like I found myself saying, "Oh shit!" Like I really am into this. And like want to know what's happening. Like I'm starting to actually care about the story, which that actually kind of picked up as I went. So I don't know. I'll see if you get there. But it is, I feel like flaw is actually, I think this was like in my review, the one negative I listed was it takes a while to get going or to reveal how amazing it is. And then I was like, that's actually kind of a weird thing to list as a flaw because the game is so amazing.
I get it though. I mean, I'm giving it, I happen to like this kind of game. So I feel like I'm being more patient with these opening hours than someone else might be. But I am excited to like, I think I'm probably going to be able to jump really high soon and I can already see some areas that I want to jump to. So I'm excited to get to that.
Yeah.
But I'll figure it out when I get home and play it again.
Kirk, what are you playing?
Oh, man. Okay, well, I played a few things. The first thing that I played was a game called Hades.
Yeah, just announced at the Game Awards.
Yeah, this is the new... Have either of the two of you played this game yet?
Not yet.
No, but I've seen a lot of pictures of that sexy Hades son in the game. Boy, is he a looker.
Son of Hades, yeah. So this game is the new game from Supergiant Games. It is who are the makers of Pyre and Bastion and Transistor. They basically just make nothing but amazing games. And this is another one of those, from what I can tell. It's fantastic. It is a sort of... Gameplay is probably closest to Bastion, if I was comparing it to one of their games. It's, you know, a top-down action RPG, roguelike, I guess. It's a roguish game. So you play as the son of Hades. It is set in the sort of the same pantheon as God of War, actually. So you're like meeting Poseidon and Zeus, so the Greek gods are around. But it's a very different vibe than that. And he's trying to get out. It's not really clear why.
That's so confusing when you say the same pantheon as God of War, because now God of War is Norse.
Yeah, I guess true. The original God of War.
Although,
I guess the new God of War.
Right. Greek mythology came out before God of War.
But it's cool. Okay, don't worry about it.
So, anyways, it's Greek. It's got Greek gods. And,
cool.
And, you know, you move around. It's like an isometric viewpoint. You do attacks and a fast dodge. But it's very cool, and it's cool in that way that Supergiant games tend to be, where I started playing and I was thinking, okay, this game actually feels a little bit like maybe some sort of an apologia about Pyre, which was a much stranger game. You know, Pyre was kind of 3v3 basketball, and I think I'm just guessing that people...
A fantastic game.
It was, I know, an amazing game. I really, really liked it. But I think that maybe people weren't so hot on it, like compared to Bastion, which I think was like a mega seller, and Transistor, which was like maybe probably not seen as quite as successful, but still top-down action game. So it seems a little bit like they're like, okay, now we're going to do a game that's like a roguelike Diablo thing. Like when you die, it says, I think it's, there is no escape. There's this awesome animation that plays and you fall into this thing of blood and it looks like Dark Souls.
Very Resident Evil.
Yeah, and it has that exactly that, like the sort of Japanese game intoning something every time you die. And then you come back out of this thing of blood and your guy says, you know, oh God. All right, well, here we go again.
My dad is such a jerk, he says.
Yes,
I don't
and
know.
He's very, oh man. So the lore is actually very charming, which is typical of these games. Greg Kasavin, I believe, is writing this again, and he's a great writer. And one of the best things is whenever you die, you go back to your castle in Hades, in, you know, the underworld. You come out and your dad is sitting there on his throne and he kind of like talks shit to you about how you're never going to get out, and you kind of like petulantly talk to him, and yet your guy is just totally like hot sword guy.
He's like a hot 20-something Hades son. His name's like Zagreus or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forget
his
name.
Because he's a real Greek mythological figure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he is.
And apparently his parentage is in dispute, according to myth, and Zeus might be his dad. But in this game, Hades is his dad, unless perhaps I'm revealing a spoiler I don't know about.
It's maybe unclear who his mom is, not sure. But the best thing is that Cerberus is right there, the three-headed dog, and it's this huge, you know, demon dog, and yet you can talk to Cerberus each time, and Cerberus is kind of a really good dog, and so he loves the dog, and the dog likes him.
Heather said something about how you can like give the dog presents, and the dog will give you stuff. Is that true?
I don't know. I haven't done that, but it wouldn't surprise me. Clearly, the dog is a thing, and
that's great.
How does Cerberus compare to Nugget?
Cerberus has more heads and is slightly larger, but Nugget is more ferocious and a better guard dog, probably.
Got it.
So anyways, I really like it. It's in early access, and I'd say the other interesting thing about this game is that it's on the Epic Game Store, and it's an Epic Game Store exclusive, so you can't get it on Steam, which is one of the first games to do that. I think the new Super Meat Boy is going to do that. That certainly is kind of interesting. Right now, the Epic Game Store seems pretty stripped down. It like has Fortnite and this and, you know, some other stuff, but I was like, hey, I'm playing a PC game, not through Steam, and I don't know, it seems like it runs fine. So anyway, that game is pretty cool. I also have been playing through the Assassin's Creed Odyssey DLC, the first episode in what's something like the Tale of the First, the Legend of the First Blade, something like
that.
Yeah,
something like that.
Surprisingly great. I haven't gotten that far.
Why is that surprising?
Assassin's
Creed Odyssey is such a good game.
Well, sure, but so I guess the reason it's surprising is the way that it's different than Assassin's Creed Origins' DLC. So Origins got two DLC packs. First one was like a new area that was basically just a microcosm of Assassin's Creed Origins. It was like there's a little oasis and a ruin that you can go through and, you know, a desert area. And it's just more Assassin's Creed Origins. And it didn't do much for me. And then their second DLC was this big, you know, go to the afterlife, all this amazing shit happens, you know, yeah. like supernatural stuff. And that was a lot cooler and kind of more involved. So they're kind of doing the same thing with Odyssey, but it's a little different in that the kind of the non-supernatural, they're doing some return to Atlantis or the Fate of Atlantis DLCs. So that's going to be the supernatural thing. That'll
be
later
the
next
Fate of Atlantis,
year.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the first thing, but it's different because it doesn't go to a new map. It takes place in Macedonia, which is an area you don't really go to much in the main game. And then also it's just structured a little bit differently. Like they add to the cultist thing. It is more of the game, but it's the fact that it's just right there in the world alongside all the side quests I haven't done makes it work better for me. It doesn't feel as much like I have to fast travel this whole other area. And also just it's good. Like I found the Origins expansion to not be that exciting. It had a one good storyline about a guy who like you screwed over in the past and he was coming back for you something. But in this one, I mean, it's the story, the writing is just good. I'm not sure who wrote it, but it's just like, it's surprisingly soulful. Like it's very introspective. It really focuses on Cassandra and who she is and like the nature of the choices she makes and her decisions. And I just have been liking the writing. And then also it's a kind of cool, I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. And so yeah, I've been enjoying that. And I feel like I'm going to be playing that game forever. There's so much
of
stuff they're adding to it.
It's never going to end. It's a game as a service. I'm excited to go back into that game. Anything else that you're playing that you want to talk about?
A couple things. I guess you've been playing Destiny 2 more than I have, but I played a little bit more of that since you've been getting back into it too in the expansion launch. So I'm actually feeling that game, but we can talk about it when you talk. And I played a little bit of Tetris Effect in VR, which I know I talked about that game a couple weeks ago.
Great. I bet it's great in VR.
It's awesome in VR. So that game is awesome. I've just played more of it in general, and it's really, really good. I mean, it's definitely like one of those best of the year contenders for sure. I love it. Speaking about actually talking about Celeste and games that do cool things with music, that game does amazing things with music and a lot of interactive music. Very cool. And then, yeah, playing it in VR, I actually really do like playing it on a screen with headphones. Like because the sound is just such a big part of the experience for me that's not that different than playing it in VR. But playing in VR is still really cool, and it kind of transports you there, and you're just surrounded by, you know, it. And it's kind of just right in front of your face, and you're just staring at this Tetris game. And it puts you in the zone a lot faster, which is what that game is all about doing. So very, very cool. I was glad I dug up the PSVR to play it. Mm-hmm. And great game. So
let's talk about Destiny 2. So I jumped back into Destiny 2 after not having
Maddie, welcome to the podcast, and now we're going to talk about Destiny for a while.
Continue.
Yeah, I hope you like listening to us talk
Never
about
Destiny.
Never
heard of it? Go on.
So, first of all, Destiny 2 plays such an interesting role in my life because for a while, over the past couple of months, I thought I would never go back to it. And then I picked it up again on Sunday and I was like, oh, hey, like I'm kind of enjoying going back into the rhythm of playing
bounties.
Wait, why did you pick it back up again if you had...
Just on a whim. No, actually, it wasn't on a whim. It was because I watched the new raid getting played by Datto on stream. Because the new raid came out on Friday, and I was watching like a little bit of a stream of that, and I was like, "Oh man, I want to play this raid, so I gotta get my grind on to get high enough power level to get to the raid, right?" So, picked it up, and then yesterday the Dawning came out, and the Dawning is this winter event that they do every year. Usually, it's
non-denominational holiday events.
Yeah, it's just the Dawning. Suddenly, you get to the tower, which is the main hub, and it's snowing, and you can pick up snowballs and throw them at people.
And this super terrible music is playing. Apologies to whoever wrote that music, but it's like this awful elevator holiday slow jam thing. It's not
so this good. Year they did something really cool with the Dawning. Instead of oftentimes it's just like based around microtransactions and cosmetics, and like it's the type of thing that you don't really care about unless you're really into cosmetics. This year they did something cool. It's like there's this whole elaborate quest where you have to go around the universe collecting ingredients to bake into cookies. And so as you kill aliens, they'll drop hilarious items. So for example, you kill the Vex, who are these robotic alien creatures, and then they drop Vex milk, which is this white fluid that you see all over Vex planets, where you kill the Cabal, who are these militaristic giant turtle-like creatures, and they drop Cabal oil. And then you mix that with another ingredient, which is based on how you kill them, so you might get like an impossible heat ingredient by killing people with fire damage. And then you mix those into this oven, and you can create different kinds of cookies, and they're all different based on the ingredients you use. And then each character, each NPC vendor around the world, around the universe, wants a different item. So you have to go and find the cookie recipes and figure them out and experiment and get a different cookie for each vendor, and then you complete this quest and you'll like get stuff along the way. And it's surprisingly fun and interesting and just like adds an extra thing to do while you're going around and doing all your other random Destiny activities like strikes and bounties and whatever. And I'm in the middle of a sleeper simulant quest, which takes forever. But it's made more fun by being able to collect cookie ingredients along the way. So yeah, I think my relationship with Destiny will remain that I pick it up occasionally and love it for a few days and then go and get disgusted with it for another few weeks and so on.
I've been chewing a little bit on the expansion.
On Cabal Oil cookies,
which sound dipped in Vex milk, of course.
Oh my
God.
Yeah, with oil.
So,
yes.
Not butter.
Not a desirable cookie.
One of them is taken butter.
Okay, well, butter, yeah.
Well, but
yeah,
the taken are like an alien ghost race.
I guess they would kind of maybe
I don't
be
know
buttery.
How good or bad that is. I can't say, but no. Cookies need
they're
butter.
Made out of like alien goo.
It's probably good that the Guardians are immortal if they're going to be eating these cookies. Let's put it that way. So I've been playing a little bit since the Black Armory came out. And it's interesting. I think, you know, there was this very negative reaction to Black Armory initially just because of the way it was kind of marketed and the way people have gotten used to DLC. And not to, I'll be brief here since we don't want to do a whole Destiny thing. But it has been, it's made me reflect a little more on like how this game works now. And I kind of think it works okay, where the idea with the Black Armory and with the annual pass is more just like, we're going to be constantly just giving you new stuff to do. And the Dawning is like that. But also these quests and these forges and stuff and this new raid are like that. And I was initially thinking, oh my God, I have to get my power level so much higher to do these new forges. But then I looked back and I was like, man, I haven't even finished the original raid that launched with Forsaken. I haven't finished that dungeon, the Shattered Throne.
There's still a lot to do.
There's a lot to do that I haven't done. And just because the stuff is new doesn't mean I have to do it right now. So it's made me kind of want to just get back into, playing a couple days, a week, getting together with you and some people and just playing and like seeing the stuff I haven't seen yet. And then eventually seeing the stuff that they've just added, which seems like a cool way to play.
Yeah, it was just a bit of a like gut punch because you're used to this rhythm of like, oh, the December update's live. I can go and I'll get automatically caught up to speed because usually they'll launch it with something where it's like, oh, suddenly the new threshold is X number and you'll start getting stuff immediately that drop at that
number.
And
they did fix that a little bit. They like lowered the requirements and they made like the Engram drops leveling
up a little bit.
Faster,
it's still pretty
grindy. But it's
grindy.
Still, yeah, you got to just play. So it's kind of a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can get like 5 power a day if you're playing a few hours every day, so it's still very grindy, which is what players wanted, and I get that, and it's interesting. I'm curious to play more, and hopefully you and I will have a chance to raid this weekend. And Maddie, I know that by this time next year, you will have listened to us talk about Destiny so much that you will be a hardcore Destiny player. I guarantee.
Hopefully
that.
We can. I would love
that
to play.
That could happen,
Maddie,
so
it
will.
This isn't even a hypothetical. This is going to be so oversaturated by Destiny talk that
I am eventually. I'm just going to be like, I just got to check it out to know what they're talking about, and then it'll suck me in.
Yep.
I'll be designing my cool outfit, posting pics of it on Twitter to show
you
off
really
how
will.
Totally sweet my jacket is.
Well,
or
the,
whatever.
The cool thing is that Destiny is like, it's way more fun. It's only kind of enjoyable if you're playing by yourself. It's way more fun if you play with people you know. So if you came on PC and started playing with me and Kirk, you
would be
totally hooked. Yeah.
Here's the thing about that. I already have social games I like playing with my friends, and they are fighting games, which
this
could
is different.
Bring us
it
to
does
our next
play,
topic.
Yeah, well,
Smash.
Hold on. We're gonna
no
we're
talk
gonna
about
get
Destiny
to that.
For another hour. Play. I'm so sorry to interrupt.
Real quick, we're actually going to take a break before we talk about Smash.
Okay, cool.
But real quick, I wanted to throw in Monster Boy and the Cursed Kingdom. I played that a bunch on my flights to and from LA, where I went out for the Game Awards last week. That game is incredible. You guys have to check out that game. It's like it's kind of Metroidvania-ish, except it's a lot more linear. Like, if you're worried about getting lost and all in it, you do not get lost in this game. It's a very straightforward platformer, action RPG, not afraid to be challenging, not afraid to be incredible and charming and cute and hilarious, and I love it to death. I highly, highly recommend that you guys check it out. You, like, change into all these different animal forms and get different abilities based on your animal form, and really, really cool game. Okay, nice. We're going to take a break, and then we will be back to talk about Super Smash Brothers.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Bite clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back, Kirk and Maddie, once again. Would you like to talk about Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, the new video game from Nintendo?
No, I only want to talk about Super Smash Bros. Melee. Well, sorry, I prepared a lot to say.
That is, you are a purist. I wonder.
Not really.
I do wonder if this is going to take over for Melee.
It won't.
And purist circles.
It will take over for Super Smash Bros. 4, aka Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U. Mm-hmm. That is the game that will be sunsetting. Melee reigns eternal within Melee circles and will never die, and is its own cult at this point. So
not shocking.
That's in a corner, hanging out with itself, being wonderful and charming to watch. I actually really enjoy watching competitive Melee at this point.
Uh-huh.
But Ultimate is already coming.
Yeah. So how is it, Maddie? as a fighting game expert of Kotaku Split Screen, how is Super Smash Bros. Ultimate?
I'm really enjoying it so far. While I've been in New York, I got to stream with Cecilia and learn about air dodges and get ever so slightly better at them. I guess I am a fighting game superstar in the context of this trio of people, but Cecilia is a Smash superstar in the context of Kotaku.com.
She beat Sonic Fox, so yeah.
Yes, and she is very good. So it was super fun to play with her and get some more tips about how to play so that when I go back home, I can go to a whole lot of Smash parties. I have a lot of friends locally who really enjoy Super Smash Brothers, and every Super Smash Brothers game comes out, I get together in person with a lot of people and just play Super Smash Brothers for a really long time. That has been something I have done since the N64 days, and it's just like this one circle of friends that I have that is, I mean, we get along for other reasons, but it's like a tradition that we uphold, and so I'm excited about that. I would have played this game even if it sucked. We all played Brawl plenty, and Brawl had many issues.
Tripping.
But, you know, many other things about it that people complain about.
Yeah.
But we still played it. So even if this game somehow is revealed to have strange competitive flaws, then I think I'll still enjoy it on some level.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, it actually seems to be making a splash in a good way. There was a tournament last weekend that Ian Walker wrote about for us where Fox won. And so now people are worried that Fox McCloud is going to be dominant in this game because typically he's
how
like the go-to.
How could people possibly know
you can't. You really can't. But,
yeah.
But you know how anxious fighting game people get about something being high tier or low tier. It's
of course.
There's a lot of anxiety.
Even though we all know, thanks to
tiers
you, that
fake.
Tiers are bullshit.
They are fake. They're psychological. Anyway, I could go on and on. I don't know.
Yeah, well, so I have a couple of thoughts. First of all, so I expressed the controversial opinion the other day on Twitter that the unlocking is a grind and sucks because I opened up the game and I saw the 8 characters from N64 and I was like, Jesus Christ, like I'm going to have to unlock 70-something characters. And what really bugs me about it is that it's just so boring to unlock the characters. Like, they just pop up out of nowhere every few minutes as you're playing instead of having interesting unlocking requirements or having some sort of challenge for unlocking them. And that's what really bums me out. Like, I wish there was some more interesting twist or way to unlock it, because right now it just feels like you just grind. You just play the game and they'll show up randomly. So yeah, I'm kind of bummed that I can't even try any of the new characters until I go through that grind, as I have been, and I've been getting all these random characters that I don't really care about, and I want to check out Richter and Simon and K. Rool, but haven't been able to yet, unfortunately.
Well, you could play on Cecilia's Switch.
Yeah,
she's got
true.
All those
she
guys.
Has all of them. Yeah.
If you want to check those characters out,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Kirk, I guess you can weigh in before I say what I think of this. You haven't talked, so you can say something.
I mean, I have a specific take on that that kind of comes from my perspective, so I guess I can share that. So I've never played a Smash game before. This is my first Smash game. And I have it on 3DS. I have that Smash. I don't think I ever bought the one for Wii U. The reason for that is I didn't really have a Nintendo growing up. I did not have that group of friends you described, mm-hmm. Maddie, which sounds very fun, though. They must be real friends if they play this game together, because this is a game designed to test friendships. But I've never really had a reason, and Nintendo sent me a code for this one, so I said, okay, I'm going to play this. And so for me, the process of unlocking characters has been fine because they're all new to me. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. And this game is completely ridiculous if you've never played a Smash game and you start playing this thing. It is basically like being thrown into the deep end of the ball pit. There are colorful things surrounding me at all moments. I don't know what any of them are. There's items in every level. There's 1,000 levels. The wind starts blowing.
There are so many allusions to every other game that's ever existed. Yeah.
So I have just begun to get my head around. You know, I've watched some videos. I read Cecilia's very helpful tips post. And some other tips posts around the internet, watched some videos, have been starting to get my head around it. Maddie, I'd love to know some of the tips that she told you, so maybe mm-hmm. you can share some of those.
You can watch that video. There were genuinely some helpful things in there.
Oh, nice.
That she was
okay.
showing me on our Twitch channel.
Oh, I will watch. I guess I can watch her show you those things and then she will show them to me.
You can watch me be bad and then eventually kind of good.
My experience of unlocking characters has been fine for that reason. I think it's sort of fun. I'm playing through World of Light, and I'm playing just some regular Smash to practice. And just every so often, it says, hey, there's a new person. What's his name? Kit from Kid Icarus? Uh-huh. He keeps kicking my ass. I can't unlock him. He keeps wailing on me. So I'm trying to unlock him right now. And,
That's a very different perspective. Yeah.
Yeah. So exactly. I could imagine if I had played the one on Wii U, I would be
I
know most of these characters.
At least several dozen of these characters.
It feels like it's way more beneficial of a mechanic to people. I just wish that there was a tournament mode where I could just automatically unlock them all, or that there was some other option that wasn't just play until these characters all show up 68 times or whatever it is. It's just really bumming me out and making me not want to play the game.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen this take across a Smash coming out each time it's come out. I feel like I've seen some variants
on this.
Those
previous ones have been different. Usually it's 10 characters are locked and everyone else is automatically unlocked.
The Wii U version, the most recent version before this one, still had a lot of characters. It didn't have 76, but it was still a lot. And I still remember people having a similar complaint where they were like, I really just want to get to the end of this. I've been unlocking characters for so long and you have to play for so long in order to get them all. I would love to just pay money to have the rest of them. I don't personally
have
money.
It should be for free. You just answer a specific
what I've seen other people say. I don't know that you're entirely alone in this.
What if they put the characters in a randomized box and then you can pay for those boxes and then maybe you got a character that you already have.
That sounds fun and ethical.
Well, they can make some money on that idea.
I feel like
you should be a monetization specialist.
I feel like I have this very annoying fighting game player opinion on this, which is if you are just playing the game the way you quote-unquote should be, you'll unlock all the characters because I'm used to the structure of learning every character in a fighting game and needing to learn them in a certain order and being like, it's going to give you the characters you need to learn how to play right off. And by the time you're pretty good at those handful of characters, it's going to give you someone else who will have some different moves. And then you will beat them and see how they play as you beat them, learn how to beat them, which is an important skill. And then you will have them in your roster and you can try to play as them. And it sort of will slowly show you how to use each character. But that is only really fun if you think it's fun to play a whole heck of a lot of versus matches of Super Smash Brothers. Mm-hmm. But also that is the game. Like, fighting games and learning how to play them means playing versus over and over and over. And that is a grind of a kind. It's also part of how you become good at a fighting game is a heck of a lot of repetition, and some of it is not very interesting. But also, usually when I'm unlocking Smash characters, I'm usually doing it with other people there, which I think really changes the experience, because usually I have a friend over or a few friends over. We're all playing versus together, and then suddenly the room is interrupted by a new challenger approaching. Everyone screams in delight.
You
trade the
things.
Controller around to see who can beat Pit or whoever it may be. We try different different things. We talk out loud about what we're going to do to beat this character and how excited we are to get them. Once you finally unlock them, everyone gets to try them. By the time everyone's tried the new character, oh, another new challenger approaches, and it just unfolds over the course of an evening. Mm-hmm. That's an experience I've had with a few Smash games up till now.
As opposed to me, who was playing
alone
on an airplane by myself.
Just stewing in your seat. God,
well,
damn it,
I just really wanted to play as a new character.
I get it.
I thought
really
you played as Kirby. Aren't you like a Kirby main? Isn't that
Yeah, when
thing?
I play against people, I play as Kirby. But I wanted
Kirby,
to experiment.
Man. Kirby's the one
characters.
Who survived in the mm-hmm, world of light mm-hmm. cutscene.
But
man.
The thing
Kirby.
Is, yeah, as someone who's played every single Smash game and played a ton of 64 back in the day, I know all of these characters cold, including like Animal Crossing Dude and Villager and Wii Fit Trainer, like all these Wii U additions. And you I know, haven't gotten a single new character yet, which is bumming me out.
But there are minute differences, though, Jason. There's minute differences in how each of them play.
Of course.
I fought Wii Fit Trainer. I unlocked her, and that was some funny
nice.
Shit. Like, I knew that that character had been added and that it was a mm-hmm. good joke, but actually playing against her, the part where she is like, and now everyone together.
Yeah, she's ridiculous, right?
Yeah, I was laughing my ass off, so mm-hmm. I'm a fan of that.
It's a very funny game, and it has a very good
sure,
sense
yeah,
of humor
very funny.
To it. Sometimes it goes a little too far. Like, there's a thing that caused some controversy, which is that Metal Gear's Paz comes with a bomb in the World of Light
mode.
Oh, I
saw someone mention
after
that.
The infamous
Rough.
Ground Zero.
That's a, I don't know. That's a kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a
dark,
little surprising
very dark humor.
That a joke that dark,
very
like,
dark
made
joke.
It past the pitch table.
I guess the problem is that that was a shitty thing. Like, when it happened in the game, that was pretty shitty. So you're
it's like, remember
making
this
a joke
crappy
about
thing?
Was,
right. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. It's a really good game. I'm really enjoying it. Not a huge fan of World of Light, but what I've been playing so far in Versus, I've really enjoyed.
I sort of
World
like World
of
Light, of Light
just
too.
A little too much for me.
Wait, what? You like it?
I think it's kind of cool.
Love yourself
I'm just like
more.
A scrub who doesn't know anything and has
okay,
no
but,
expectations.
Okay, but like nothing happens in World of Light. You just like walk Kirby around in the forest and then he like just... fights different.
So for context, Kirk. Single player mode. So the first one didn't have a single player mode. It just had like every character you'd sort of like Street mm-hmm. Fighter style, where
battle.
You'd have
yeah.
just like battles
yeah,
leading up to Master Hand. The second game had this thing called Adventure Mode, which is really cool. It's kind of like a platformer ish thing where you'd go around and beat people up.
I think I played a
up.
Little bit of that on 3DS. So.
Uh-huh. No. Well, that's in Melee.
Wasn't there an Adventure Mode or something like that in the 3DS version?
No. Sort of well, so thing? And then the third one, Brawl, had Subspace Emissary, which was the coolest version of this,
it's
which is just
great.
This wild single player
that
mode.
Is what I thought this was going to be, which
yeah,
is
that's
why
what I was
I'm
hoping for. Yeah.
Okay. It had like actual cutscenes and like mm-hmm. a quote unquote story, but it was like a completely ludicrous story where like Zelda and Samus would be teaming up
it
to
was
like
incredible.
Fight.
It was
kind of like
so
you guys have played the NetherRealm Mortal Kombat games, right?
Yes,
was
it was
like
a little
that?
Bit like that, except it was Super Smash Brothers, so it was like really funny because why would these characters even be working
right,
together,
exactly.
et cetera? Yeah.
Yeah. And then 4 didn't have any sort of like single player. They cut the single player mode for 4. But they had like challenges and training stuff.
Yeah, they had other
stuff,
modes
and, like,
that you probably played
was,
that were still
single, probably
single
thinking
player
of some,
stuff.
Something
yeah.
like that. And then now they have this World of Light mode and it's just way too much. It's just like they're throwing all this bazillion different stickers and spirits and it's all kind of nonsense. But then ultimately the gameplay is just
agree.
Like versus
I mean,
mode.
I kind of like, well, so my take on World of Light is just that it's been kind of silly and fun. I wasn't expecting a single player campaign and it isn't one, but, mm-hmm. but I've done a lot of it and I kind of like the whole, like it lets them bring in a whole bunch more characters from a whole bunch more franchises than just the whatever 70 odd characters that there are. So it's kind of fun to just get the whatever spirit stickers for each
sure.
thing. And the managing game, like I get how people could get into that. That's not really my thing, the sort of managing a million of your little, whatever, you know, collectible JRPG mm-hmm. style things.
Leveling
but the,
up your pocket stickers
exactly,
that
carrying
only
them
matter
around
in certain contexts.
And like feeding them treats so they level up.
Yeah,
like that's not really my thing, but the actual matches are usually really short and they're all really funny and they have like a weird twist and they're actually like helping me understand things. There was one I recently fought against, gosh, I can't remember what it was. I think maybe it was a Pokemon. And it was, I just had to beat it, but it was just running away from me. And so I had to just catch up with it. And it wound up being a kind of a good little lesson for me in dealing with a highly evasive opponent. Mm. Because normally they come and just attack you and you can just kind of, you know, wail on them a little bit. But this was much harder and I had to kind of learn to anticipate their emotions. So it's helping me a little bit. And I actually just find the thing, considering I'm just sort of playing by myself right now, it's sort of fun.
Have you guys tried playing online yet?
No, I hear it's a mess, and yeah, I'm not interested. Like I would just get my ass kicked right now. I just don't know what I'm doing. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Local play is better for fighting games anyway, because there's no lag. Right. So
yeah, unfortunately, this is a console that is literally designed for local play. So Smash is definitely the perfect game for it. You can just take your thing around and play Smash Brothers with anyone at any time. Just challenge random people on the subway.
Yeah. Also, there's still 8-player Smash, which at least for my friend's group is fun chaos for when there's more than 4 people.
Yeah, I was playing on my plane ride back to New York. I was tempted to challenge. The guy next to me was playing Zelda on his Switch. I was tempted to challenge him in Smash. But
how many people can you have playing on a single Switch handheld? Because I've never really noticed that the screen is so small. I was doing much better when I played it on my TV. I was like, this is a little small for how big the
action is. That's a good question. I don't know. Probably 4, that'd be pretty funny. Or maybe. I don't know.
8 people on a single Switch screen, it would just be like, your Switch would start
smoking. It'd be chaos, but the game is already kind of chaos. So yeah, so we will no doubt talk about Smash more in the future, but we do have to take another break, and then I am going to bring on our old friend, Kotaku Split Screen, friend of the show, Jeff Keighley, who had his big award show last week, and we are going to talk about that. So let's take a little break, and then you guys will come back.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Hey, I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And we're the hosts of Lifehacker's podcast, The Upgrade. On The Upgrade, we help you improve your life one week at a time. We talk to guests like former hacker Hector Monsegur about online security.
You need to be aware of how you could be attacked. You need to be aware of what's your weakness.
And Alan Alda on how to communicate more effectively.
And in order to achieve that, we start with teaching exercises derived from improvisation.
And sex therapist Steven Snyder about how to have great sex in a long-term relationship.
What really works under those circumstances is if you enjoy the other person selfishly.
Hey, your life? It's terrible. We can help.
Find The Upgrade wherever you get your podcasts.
And now we are joined by returning guest and friend of Kotaku Split Screen, the one and only host and producer of the Game Awards, Mr. Jeff Keighley. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jason.
Thank you so much for coming on the show once again.
Glad to be back.
So originally we were talking about having you on last week before the Game Awards, but actually it wound up working out even better that you're on afterwards because we can kind of do a post-mortem of the show and talk a little bit about how you put together all of the cool things that you put together. So first of all, congratulations on the success. You just announced this week that it got a ridiculous number of viewers, some multi-million figure. I think you said it was twice as many people as watched last year's?
Yeah. We were surprised because last year was 3x the year before. And then this year I was kind of hoping it would kind of be steady to last year. And then just everywhere, it just grew massively. And we had more distribution in China and other places. So that helped. But even domestically, or you know, on the main platforms like Twitch and YouTube, the show was basically double last year's size. Which was baffling to me. It's getting scary, honestly, just because you know we keep building like this, and eventually it's going to have to level off at some point. but yeah, no, we're thrilled. And you know, it's also more than the numbers. The reaction's been really positive from everyone online, which means even more to me.
Yeah, it was cool to be there. It was fun to be around everybody. It felt like a large chunk of the video game industry came out for the show. It almost felt like E3 in December. Everyone was hanging out at the JW Marriott afterwards. It was pretty cool. pretty cool atmosphere.
Yeah, no, I love that everyone comes to town. The tough thing for me is because I'm producing and hosting the show, most people like you, I don't even get to see in person because everyone's there hanging out. But yeah, it was really awesome to see the support across the industry. And I think a lot of people tell me they like it even more than E3 because E3, you know, folks are there with their teams. They're working really hard all day at booths and team dinners and Game Awards. People can kind of chill out and, you know, we can bring everyone together. And that was sort of emblematic of that opening moment with Reggie, Phil, and Sean all walking out, which is something that, you know, wouldn't happen at E3, but we were lucky enough to make it happen at Game Awards.
Yeah, I was I'm actually curious, what do you do after hosting the award show? Do you go to an after party? Do you go straight to sleep? What do you do?
No, I usually meet with our team for a little while, you know, in the
celebratory
bowels of,
champagne.
Yeah, like a little toast, and we just sort of recap things. I go back to the truck. I'm also just, you know, curious to sort of figure out how we're doing numbers wise. So yeah, I usually meet with them. Then I went to, you know, quick little dinner with some friends because I hadn't really eaten much that day. And then, I went to, YouTube did an after party that I went to for a little while after that. But yeah, it's a weird feeling when you finish the show because, you know, everything's done. You can't really change anything. And then you just kind of wait for numbers. And, you know, even during the show, I'm checking my phone to sort of see how many concurrent are on Twitch or YouTube just to get a sense of how the audience is doing.
Yeah, I was watching you. I was watching you standing there, like, checking your phone between.
Oh, for sure.
Every time you'd come on, it's fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. No, I you want to sense what people are thinking online and, you know, reading the Twitter feedback and seeing the reaction. You know, we felt pretty good. Like, we saw, you know, when I checked Twitch, it was like 900,000 concurrent. You're like, okay, cool. Like, people showed up. And then you just make the show happen. But yeah, it's you go to the parties and then, you know, it's the next couple days is really just sort of trying to pull together all the data. It took us like 5 days to get all the numbers in from around the world because we were on 45 platforms this year.
And then sleeping forever. I read an article, I think it was a Polygon article, about your kind of behind the scenes journey that was all about the number of hours you put in, which sounds like some intense crunch.
Yeah, it's you know, it's just one of those things. It's a really unique job because everything counts down to December 6th, and once you get to sort of November, you literally look at the calendar and say, "Here's how many hours we have left," and you know, there are going to be things that just don't get done at the end because, you know, you're working so hard. And I really put a lot of it on myself just because I'm, you know, I wear a lot of hats with this show. We got, as you said, everyone from the industry flying in. So you want to make sure everyone has a good seat. You get worried that it's raining during the day. And it's just, you know, it's just a lot of things to juggle in your mind. So yeah, it's a thing I sort of condition myself to do every year. And, you know, I'm happy to do it because it's, you know, it's such an important moment for the industry.
Was there anything that you wanted to make happen that couldn't happen this year for whatever reason?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a ton of stuff that we talk about every year. I mean, there are, you know, games.
Other than
certainly.
Half-Life 3.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, there are always, you know, games you'd love to have at the show. But, you know, first of all, they have to be actual games that are being made because we don't make the games. And there are things that, you know, drop out or change. That happens every year, right? I've after doing this for almost 20 years, you condition yourself to know, don't get too excited when someone pitches you something in July because, you know, half the time it's going to disappear anyways. So there's that kind of stuff. And yeah, I mean, the moment with the big three on stage, that was something I had sort of unsuccessfully tried to do in past years, and we got that done, which was great. We had always, Troy Baker and I have always been talking about doing kind of a bigger musical number that we talked about. We actually worked with a Broadway writer this year, a guy named Joe Iconis, who has a show called Be More Chill, and we were working on a song that Troy was maybe going to perform that we didn't end up sort of getting done for the show.
Next time.
So there's definitely things that... there are ideas that we kick around, and you know, we were trying to figure out how do we celebrate Fortnite in an interesting way. So of course we're like, well, do we do a dance thing? And I was like, it just doesn't feel like the right thing for our show to do. So there are lots of like creative ideas, but honestly, kind of with our team and just like it's part of the creative process, like anything, where there are ideas that, you know, pop up and they don't happen. You know, like getting the Muppets, that was really cool to do something with Pepe. And that was like, I've always wanted to have a Muppet on the show, and that just kind of worked out this year, which was great.
That was fun. I wanted to ask, so you got the big three on stage. You've been talking about that for a while, wanting to to get the heads of Sony, Nintendo, and Microsoft all on stage. But I was kind of disappointed that they didn't actually announce anything. Like, I was hoping they would be like, hey, we are now announcing that we're going to work together on cross-play, or like, we're going to work together to fight gamer toxicity.
You wanted Reggie to pull out his Switch and God of War is playing on it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, make it happen. Come on, man.
Yeah, look, I think it was landmark year for all the crossplay stuff. To me, it was emblematic of like, let's get all these guys together on stage. And yes, of course, it would have been awesome to have them announce, let me do something more. I think, you know, those will be things that will come in time. And I think it was a positive sign to just get them there and welcome everyone to the show. And the other thing I will say is like, our show, you know, it's, yes, we make game announcements, but I think the thing we're thinking a lot about is like, you know, would someone announce a new hardware on our show? No, it doesn't feel like the right venue. But yes, something about, you know, thinking about online toxicity or, you know, ways to work together and collaborate would have been great. We sort of didn't get there, but look, my hope is that that'll become a yearly thing where we'll get those guys up there.
Yeah, maybe. Well, so I'm curious. You said you've been trying to do this for a long time. What has stopped it in the past? Is it just them, their PR people just being roadblocks? Is it them having some reasons, not being able to be there? Like, what have been the roadblocks, and how were you able to overcome them this time?
Yeah, it's a combination of a bunch of things. I think it was also just a schedule thing. I'm trying to think if we've ever had all three of them there at the show. I think in 2015, we had Phil, Sean, and Reggie all at the show. That was the year that Reggie did the tribute to Mr. Iwata in the show. Mm-hmm. And yeah, mostly it's just been a schedule thing. I think it's like getting all three there and then just, you know, figuring out what could they do, you know, what's the right way to include them in the show. I mean, we toyed with ideas of like, you know, people like that presenting an award together, but then you run into issues of like, well, you know, if one of them's nominated, how does that work and everything? So yeah, it was more of just a logistical thing. And this was something that, you know, was months in sort of the planning to get everyone kind of aligned on, you know, who wants to do it? How do we message it correctly? What do they say? So just a lot of that, but it was a very collaborative process. It just takes time with everyone kind of trying to understand what they're doing. And look, they're also thinking about, well, how are we going to show up in the show? Right. And like, what are we doing? And, you know, one of the things I really try to do is be fair and equitable across the board with kind of all the platforms, all the publishers, so everyone kind of has a moment, but it doesn't feel, you know, dominated by one platform or another. But, you know, inevitably this year it was a massive year for Sony. Last year was a massive year for Nintendo, right? So it just sort of, you know, there are all those factors that sort of play into things. But yeah, we got it there, and, you know, Phil, Sean, and Reggie were all really, you know, were supportive of sort of being there in the moment and collaborating on the script and everything. So I'm really proud of it. And it's great to see, like, online, I think fans really responded to it. So even though there wasn't some, you know, breaking news announcement to open the show, it was symbolic, I think, to have all three of those platforms on our stage together.
It was cool. I enjoyed the memes. I think my favorite was someone, I saw
Everyone's
tweet
here.
The three of them, and it was like, no, it was the three of them and where are we dropping, boys?
No, exactly. That's why I think it's like in the red carpet photo we had of the three of them, like that got so many likes on Twitter. It's just cool. And like, I think, you know, they're all great guys and they are the public faces of these companies that, you know, from E3. So it was just a fun thing to do. And I think, you know, the response was great. And it was such a great way to sort of kick off the show. And look, given what's going on with E3, with Sony not being there, I thought it was really important to have like all three of those platforms sort of together on stage, celebrating our industry. And look, for me, it was meaningful too to sort of have that, you know, implicit endorsement of sort of the three platforms saying, hey, you know, we really believe in what the Game Awards stands for and how it's celebrating our industry. So it was very meaningful to me in our fifth year of the show. So it took a while, but we're glad we made it happen.
Yeah, very cool. So something that I have always been curious about, and we talked a little bit about this last year, but you came on the show last year before your show actually started, so we couldn't get into specifics. But I've always been curious about how one of your big world premiere exclusive reveals comes together, because you love your exclusives, your world premieres. So I wanted to pick a couple, and I had asked you before we started recording, you mentioned that Hades had an interesting story, but I'm curious. So can you walk me through like a game like that, like Supergiant's new game Hades, like how they came to you, or how you came to them, how the conversation started, and how that kind of went to reveal?
Yeah, every game is different in the show, and I think one thing that people may not realize is that, you know, I'm pretty heavily involved in the creative around a lot of these trailers, and you know, it's a collaboration, really, much less of like, hey, we're gonna drop this on a Dropbox and you know, you'll get it this day.
You're actually sitting there and watching cuts and giving them feedback on this stuff?
Oh yeah, for sure, most of the time, yeah. And I'm visiting studios, and you know, we're working with them on the runtime and the length, and also, you know, there's a theatricality to sort of how we can do things in our show, like like the Persona Smash Brothers reveal. That was like a really awesome moment because you know, it wasn't inside a Nintendo Direct, so when we started that, people were like, is this a new Persona game? Like, it wasn't even tied to Nintendo until you saw that envelope, and that's the kind of theatrical stuff that we can only do at Game Awards.
That was a good secret.
Exactly. Yeah, it was fun,
you
right?
And we successfully avoided that, prevented that from leaking.
Exactly. Yeah. No, and look, we're very careful about leaks and whatnot. But yeah, the Hades was, that was Greg and Amir from Supergiant met with me at DICE in Vegas in February and basically said, hey,
you know, almost a year ago,
yeah, almost a year. And I think they even emailed me, I want to say, like right after the show last year or January, and said, hey, I want to meet with you at DICE, tell you what we're doing. And they like explained that they were going to, you know, their next game, codename Hades. I didn't see anything of it at the time, but they're like, you know, our goal is really to, you know, launch it at Game Awards. We want to not only announce it, but kind of ship it, put it in early access. So that was their sort of goal and vision. And they kind of set that as like their marker for the year and then invited me up to come and see the game. And then I went up in, I want to say early summer, and then, you know, met with the team, looked at the game, did an early playthrough, talked a bit about their vision, and then sort of built off of that in terms of what they were going to do. And, you know, they ultimately ended up doing this deal with the Epic Store, which, you know, was not even, I think, on the roadmap when we first talked in February around what they were going to do. But yeah, it's definitely a long process and involves, you know, me meeting with the team, talking about the best way for them to show up. And that was a case of someone actively coming to us a year out saying, hey, our goal for our team all year, we're going to sprint to kind of be there at the Game Awards and be a part of it. So that, you know, it's, that's an example of something that takes a long time to come to fruition. But we made an agreement very early in the year that that was the goal to get there. And, you know, sometimes we have those meetings earlier in the year and then things don't pan out or they're twists and turns, but that was a pretty clear process.
Right, they have to delay the game, things don't come together.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we had, you know, even this year, we were talking to the guys at, I'm trying to think, some, like the last night we were talking to those guys about doing something, bringing that back. And then they were, I don't know, there was a bunch of stuff going on with them around their publisher and what they were doing with the game. And they sent me an email, you know, a month or two before the show saying like, hey, we don't, you know, we don't think we can get this done right now. So we can, you know, the game wasn't there. So they're always twists and turns. But yeah, Hades was a pretty clear example of that. And then, you know, some of the other ones, you know, trying to think.
I'm like, curious about Far Cry.
Yeah.
I'm curious about how that came together. Not only
I know. Where
that,
was it? Where it was, I was waiting for the Kotaku leak, since you leak every Ubisoft game.
Well, to tell you the truth, I mean, someone actually told me about that game before Far Cry 5 even came out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, okay, I mean, I'm just going to sit on this. And then, well, so actually, so I heard it was going to be in the Game Awards a while back. And then I was surprised when Ubisoft actually tweeted about it in advance, because I thought it would be a cool surprise. I didn't want to just like spoil the announcement or anything. Leave you one of those.
What a guy. What a guy. Yeah. No,
but yeah, so I'm actually curious about that. And also curious about the logic behind like teasing it in advance as opposed to coming out of nowhere and having that kind of surprise the way that Persona did.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a collaboration between sort of the studios and us. You know, I obviously like to have some total surprises in the show. You know, yeah, Persona was out of nowhere. Marvel Ultimate Alliance. You know, Nintendo really, I think, likes to totally surprise people, not even really confirm they're going to be at the
awards. Yeah, where the hell was Metroid Prime 4 in the trilogy? That's why.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, that's why I say it's funny, because I read all those rumor articles, and like half the stuff is, it's just based on what people think they know, right? It's like, oh, well, since Nintendo's announced there's Metroid Prime 4, that's got to be what they're doing. It's like, well, what about all the other things like Marvel Ultimate Alliance that like nobody would have guessed, which is just out of nowhere. So that's kind of the surprise factor. And then there's things like, you know, Mortal Kombat, where it was, you know, heavily rumored. I don't think really based on any inside knowledge. It was just like, hey, it's probably, you know, they're probably going to do another Mortal Kombat next spring, and Game Awards seems like a good place to announce it. So yes, it was there at the show, and we had, you know, been planning that with Ed and the team at Warner Brothers for close to a year around that.
So that one was also a year in advance. You knew that Mortal Kombat 11 was coming.
Yeah, I think so. We first started talking about it early in the year as a potential idea, I think. And that was a little more amorphous about like, well, when are they going to announce it? And, you know, is the Game Awards the right place to do it? And they're doing this other event in January. So again, it's sort of like a a collaborative discussion, and that's, you know, one of the biggest franchises in the industry. So that was a really important reveal for them. And, you know, they came up with the idea of what I thought was really fun, of this sort of head fake of Ed, you know, seeming like he was presenting a category. And even last year we had Ed present an award in the show, which I think was almost us sort of trying to, you know, wet the whistle a little bit about like, hey, maybe he'll come back next year and you think he's presenting an award, but he does Mortal Kombat. So yeah, sometimes things are, you know, years in planning to sort of, you know, put together what's ultimately going to happen. But yeah, MK was another one that was planned for a while. Yeah, Far Cry, that was, you know, that was a little bit later. I think it was maybe in the fall we first started talking about what we could do with that game. You know, Ubisoft has not traditionally announced things at Game Awards. And I think they were interested in trying to do something. We did something on Far Cry Primal a few years ago, which was another, you know, Far Cry game that came out very quickly. Like, I think the thing with New Dawn is that it's coming out in February.
Similar thing.
So that was, you know, it was an interesting opportunity. You know, the game was nominated. It was highly rated this year. Big franchise.
And you don't mind that they tweeted about it in advance of the show?
No, that was collaborative. Yeah. I mean, you know, our tag was at the end of the video, right? Saying tune to the Game Awards. So that's, you know, it's a struggle we always have about having some surprises, but also wanting to, you know, build awareness for the show. Because one of the challenges we face is if we don't, you know, if everything's a surprise, then you sort of don't have anything to promote. So, you know, we like promoted, I think, Anthem in advance. We promoted the Obsidian game, but we didn't say what it was. So we pick, you know, probably about half the games that we want to tease, like CTR. They sent out those kind of orange dice in advance saying sliding into the awards. So, yeah, some of the stuff we like to kind of tease people with. And Far Cry was one of those ones where they said, hey, what if we do a teaser a day or two before? And I'm like, hey, that's great because it builds more awareness for our show. So, yeah, it was always planned to sort of be teased in advance. I think, you know, there was, I think, like the box art leaked the day of, or, I mean, there was some, you know, some stuff that gets out there. And the other thing is it's really hard.
Well, it is Ubisoft.
So. Well, that's the thing. It's also very hard to keep surprises. And I'm really proud that we've never had a leak on the Game Awards side. With anything over the history of the show.
It's all Walmart Canada, so.
Hey, I mean, that's, you know, and it's tough, right? Because we're dealing with these huge global companies, and, you know, like Mortal Kombat was awesome. It didn't, you know, nothing really leaked. And, you know from E3, like so much stuff can leak. So we're really careful about that. But we also realize, hey, you know, they're going to put up pre-orders this day. Maybe there's a chance something's going to leak. And I don't think, you know, the fact that there's a new Far Cry is necessarily shocking news. It's really more like, what is the content? And they had a meaty 3-minute, you know, gameplay trailer they were going to show. So to say the day before, hey, tune in because a new Far Cry is going to be at the awards. You know, it's not as surprising, but we got a lot of other surprises. So yeah, it's always a conversation with the publishers, and we were in favor of them doing that tease.
So I want to talk about the show itself and the awards, and we do have to wrap things up pretty shortly, but hopefully I can slip in another couple questions. So something that has changed over the years is Trending Gamer. That category was eliminated and replaced by, I believe, Content Creator of the Year is what you have now. And something that I think a lot of people have been talking about, and I'm sure you've seen some of the feedback and criticism, is questions about some of these personalities that the Game Awards is supporting. Ninja was a presenter. He had some controversy this year when he told people that he doesn't stream with female gamers. You've been supportive of other controversial YouTubers. Boogie is another one. I'm curious to hear your take on this. You traditionally have stayed very much out of a lot of the cultural war aspects of video games.
Yeah.
And your show has been kind of a neutral ground. But do you feel any sort of responsibility to be selective about who you support and who you have presenting? I'm curious to hear your take on this.
Yeah, look, it's an interesting time because, you know, a lot of the, you know, game developers, as you said, are, you know, it's about their products, less about the person, right? And like, you know, we've had, obviously, in the content creator category or Trending Gamer, there have been people that have been controversial for various reasons. And, you know, we moved away from Trending Gamer to Content Creator, you know, to sort of specifically call out people that are hopefully having a positive impact on the community. And I think about that stuff for sure and struggle a little bit with, you know, what role do we play in sort of shaping who can or cannot be nominated, right? You know, we have a jury that selects the nominees, fans help select the winners, and that sort of, you know, invisible hand of the show, we think a lot about sort of what role do we play there. And, you know, thus far, we've largely stayed out of it, right? You know.
Well, also, well, who you have as presenters as well, because sure. Ninja is someone, I don't know him personally, I don't know anything about him, but he's certainly someone who made headlines for not so great reasons earlier this year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look, you know, Ninja is a powerful figure in the industry. We worked with him at E3. I think he's, you know, generally done a lot sort of for the industry overall this year. Yes, you know, people have made controversial comments. You know, he was there already at the show as a nominee, so, you know, included him as a presenter, yes. And you're right, we do have some ability to sort of shape, you know, who's inside of the show in that regard. So, yeah, it's look, it's something we think about. I'm not trying to sort of cop out and say, hey, you know, we don't think about these things. Mm-hmm. But as you said, like, it's, you know, things are controversial on many fronts right now. You know, some people had issues even with, you know, Sonic Fox's speech, right? You know, some people loved it. Other people had a lot of issues with that. And like, hey, you know, like, that's what someone's going to say when they get up there on stage and have a moment. And, you know, my
how did you feel about Sonic Fox's speech?
I mean, I thought it was, that was him, right? And it's his moment. So it's like, you know, if Corey Barlog wants to say something, he can. It's right. I mean, I don't think, you know, we're in a mode of this show, you know, sort of cutting people off if we don't like what they're saying, right? And I think it's, you know, our role is to sort of give people the stage and platform to be able to sort of discuss things. And, you know, our role is to be a facilitator of these moments. And yes, obviously there could come a limit to, you know, what we would allow inside of the show. And again, it's something we're kind of trying to evolve. And, you know, look, for Sonic Fox, for as many people that had issues with it, there are a lot of other people that absolutely loved what he had to say. And that's part of the balance, right, is that, you know, we can't please everyone. We just can sort of present, you know, the figures and the nominees and the presenters as we think, you know. It's also sort of a balance, right? And it's, you know, how can we balance things out? And in a show like this, you know, we didn't know Sonic Fox was going to win, so it's, we didn't know what he was going to say. Those are the live moments. So that's the things that you can't control. You know, the nominees.
Well, those are often the best moments, are the live moments. Between that and Joseph Fares last year, those are always the highlights.
Oh, for sure. Like, that's part of the thing is that we really, you know, that's one of the things I love about a live show like this is you just sort of don't know what's going to happen. And secretly, you kind of wish for some moments in the show, right? You hope they're good moments, not bad moments. But it's like that's, you know, that's what gets people talking, right? So like you look at like Twitch clips out of the show, like the Sonic Fox speech is by far that and the, you know, God of War Read It Boy. Those are, you know, by far sort of the biggest moments. So yeah, look, I mean, we're not, I think one thing that's important to note is like our show, I don't think we're looking to kind of book controversial moments, right? Like I think if they naturally sort of happen, great, but it's not like, you know, we're trying to throw up, you know, a certain controversial creator just to create buzz. You know, even like Joseph bringing him back this year. I mean, yeah, people wanted to see him again, but he's a great guy and super passionate. So I'm like, yeah, we should have him on the show. So we think about that, but, you know, I want our show to represent kind of the best of the industry, and you know, it's all balancing it out. So yeah, we read all the comments around that. I think it's important that we do still include the community in the show, because look, the other option is just say, hey, we're only putting game developers up there. And I've long believed since the first show that this industry is unique and that the community is a part of telling the story of games. They're a part of celebrating games. And, you know, the Oscars is never going to have an award for, you know, the favorite moviegoer of the year. But games, I think we can do something like Content Creator of the Year. So I'm a big fan of including that in our show in some way with one award, right? It's not like half the show. And then to your point, it's like, how do we recognize people there? And what I will say is that, you know, for even if you have concerns about Ninja being on the show, I think we are trying to counterbalance some of that with things like our Facebook Global Gaming Citizen program, which I'm super proud of, that we had, you know, Steven Spahn from Able Gamers in there, Luau from South Sudan, and Sadia from Pakistan, and we told their stories. So to me, it's like if we can kind of strike the right balance, I think that's really important. So even if you didn't like Ninja being there, maybe you liked Sadia's story, or maybe you liked what we did around Girls Make Games. So my goal is to facilitate this in kind of a fair and balanced way, but I don't think the solution is to say like, hey, because, you know, we don't want anyone controversial in the show, because that's it's just not a realistic point of view of, you know, what's happening out there.
Okay, cool. Well, I think that's a good note to end things on. So, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on. People can, of course, find you on Twitter, Jeff Keighley. People can, of course, go watch clips and news from the Game Awards on Kotaku or wherever else. And people can look out for you again.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Guess at E3 next year. That's your next big thing, right?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Gotta recover from this, but yeah, E3 next year.
After a long vacation.
Yes, we will recover, but thanks for coming out to the show. Glad you enjoyed it. And yeah, we're already working on next year's reveal, so stay tuned and don't spoil anything.
You're already taking meetings. Already taking meetings for Bloodborne 2 next year's Game Awards. Just get Metroid Prime 4 already. I mean,
who knows? The thing is, some of these things I really know less than people think about what's being planned. And again, there's probably half the things we thought we were doing this year didn't end up happening. So I think people think it's all locked in, but believe me, one day I'll tell the stories of some of the surprises along the way and things that got pulled. And
one day, why not now?
Oh God, no! It's you've already had enough of me. Thanks, Jason.
In your memoir. Exactly. All right, thank you so much, Jeff.
Thanks, man.
And we are back. Thank you again to Jeff for coming on the show. I am back with Maddie and Kirk. Hello again, folks.
Hello.
Hey!
Before we say goodbye for the week, it is time for our traditional off-topic section where we talk about the things that we are watching and reading and seeing and experiencing outside of video games. Maddie, why don't we start with you? What have you been up to outside of the video game world?
So I'm visiting New York City for
just
a few days.
You are in a room with me right now.
Yeah, mostly for work to visit y'all because I like coming to see y'all when I can. But also coincidentally on Saturday, a friend of mine, S.I. Rosenbaum, who used to work with me at the Phoenix, actually has curated a gallery show at this gallery called Apex in New York City, and it's mostly about time travel and art that is about time travel, and it's an incredibly cool show, and I could just talk about every single piece in the show and talk about how much I like them, but
it's like fictional pieces, like what kind of pieces?
Okay, well, so it's actually about time travel, like
it's about
in real
time
life.
Travel. Okay, so
and different art that interprets that in some way. So there's a really cool Palestinian science fiction film that she has showcasing, which is about the idea. I mean, I guess I'm slightly spoiling the film, but I think people should still watch it. It's actually available online, and it's a short film where this sort of fictional woman in the film is creating a fake past in order to justify Palestinians being allowed to live where they want to live. And so she like creates sort of this cult that politically will give them leverage, but she has to like bury all of these plates in order to justify that Palestinians had always lived where they should.
Like the Mormon, golden place.
Yes. And so it's more complicated and weird than that, but it's a really cool idea. And so a lot of the art is similar to that. Like there's this one indigenous artist who has like this broken totem pole, and it's called I Think It Goes Like This. And when S.I. originally saw the piece, she was like, oh, that's so cool. It's about how, like, you know, totem poles have been destroyed. But then she, like, read about it more and actually the totem pole in question is, like, a mass-produced totem pole from China that doesn't represent anything. And so him breaking it apart is being like, this is how it actually goes. Like, this is the order that the totems should be in. They should just be garbage. And so it's, like, basically about like fixing the past and different ways that artists have tried to fix the past using either science fiction or time travel or other things. So that was just like really, really cool. I don't go and see physical art exhibits that much in my life. But also on Saturday, she hosted this concert where she had all these guys from the Legendary Cyphers, which is like a New York City-based freestyle group that hangs out in Union Square from November. They don't do it from November to May because it's too cold, but the rest of the year they do it every Friday. And they talked about freestyle and how they like envision a verse in their mind before saying it and like the sense of being displaced from time as you are coming up with rhymes. And I was, because it's me, I was thinking about like video games and like being displaced from thinking about like what move you're going to do next in a fighting game a lot when they were talking about it. And like just the idea of the amazing things the human brain can do when you practice doing something a lot. Mm-hmm. And also they did freestyle for us and it was amazing. And nice. If I lived around here, I would totally go see them
is
perform on Friday nights.
Are they like practicing, like planning out where their freestyles
well, they
are
can't
going
because,
like
the... Well, because it's freestyle, so you have to make it up as you go, but you can sort of...
I know, but it's your brain just doing that exact
right.
technique as you go.
Yes, but it's also like you have rhymes that you know in your head without thinking about how you know the words that rhyme. And so eventually it just becomes not necessarily muscle memory, but like your brain kind of takes over and knows what the words are that you should say next. Because, or at least that's how they described it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
This
it was really
is,
neat.
Well, this is, you guys are pretty much talking about jazz improvisation. It's the
yeah.
same thing, but with words. And it's the, and jazz is a language and you... You know, whatever, not to turn it into a jazz thing, but like, you know, you learn a bunch of licks and you learn the language and you know what you're going to uh-huh. play over a given tune, but you don't exactly know. And it's very much that process of being one step ahead of what your fingers and what your, you know, body is doing. And
yeah,
man, that sounds really cool,
Maddie.
I wish I could have seen that.
It was really, really cool. And I think Apex is going to have a video of the talk that the Legendary Ciphers did. So if people actually
oh, nice.
Want to check that
cool.
out,
I love that
can.
Name, the Legendary Ciphers.
I know, it's very cool.
Kirk, speaking of jazz, you played some
yeah.
jazz last week.
I did. I went back to my hometown of Bloomington, Indiana to play in an alumni jazz band from my old high school. And it was really cool. It was so much cooler than I was expecting. And I was actually expecting it to be cool. So my high school is called Bloomington High School North. And it's a fairly well-known jazz high school. It's a so it's in Bloomington, Indiana, which is where Indiana University is. It's a very good jazz program there. It's kind of the heart of the Midwestern like jazz cabal, jazz education cabal, which is anybody listening who knows. It was like David Baker and Jamie Abersold and these people. It's like, it's this whole scene and Bloomington is right in the middle of it. So my high school always had like, we had four big bands at our school. It was like a big band program.
Four, wow.
And it was, you know, the school like made me the musician that I am. I mean, it was an incredible experience. Our director, Janice Stockhouse, shout out to Janice. She's amazing. So she and another
woman.
Was this
all after school or you had classes in music or what?
Oh, no. Yeah, we had like, I had tons of classes in music,
okay.
like multiple bands. Huh. I actually went and took classes at IU when I was there. I kind of like my senior year, I was like not even on campus half the time. It's pretty cool. This I think
that's
I feel
awesome.
Like it's maybe different now, but it was.
Yeah, that's quite a high school experience.
It was pretty great, and I was very, very lucky to get to go to this school. So going back, you know, I figured, oh, this will be cool. You know, a lot of people who went to my school went on to be professional musicians, but it was even deeper than I thought it would be. There were like 50 years worth of people. There was the woman who actually predated my director was also there, and students who studied with her were there, and there were people who were in their 50s, but there were also kids who had just graduated a couple of years ago and already know studying at IU. And so we put together a big band and everybody played, and it wound up just being a really like special cool thing that I was very happy to be a part of. So it was neat and had me
so
kind of
did you guys decide on, was it all improvising or do you decide in advance like
it
what
was
you're gonna...
So it's all it was a big band. So it's, you know, like saxes, trombones, trumpets, rhythm section. And we were playing charts. So they gave us, you know, we had music ahead of time. But then there are sections in a big band where people will solo. So, you know, I took a solo on a Thelonious Monk tune that I just... So you kind of get up for your big moment and then you blow for a chorus and then
nice.
You sit back down and like,
nice.
You know, keep playing. And what was funny about it was we went and saw the North Advanced Jazz Band, the high school kids, the night before. And they're motherfuckers. They sound really good. They sounded better than
you
we
always
did.
Have the insults as compliments.
That's the jazz. It's the jazz.
They are
way.
Nasty motherfuckers.
They were though. These kids, man. There was this lead trumpet player in that band, and their lead alto player were. Whew, those kids were good. And it was funny to reflect on. You know, we're all old and like don't play in big bands three times a week, like most of the people who were the adults. So they really just sounded amazing, and it was like a very inspiring thing to just see how good the you know these 18, 17 year old kids are, and it just made me. I don't know. I have a million thoughts on jazz education and music education and how underfunded it is and how important it is and like what a huge part of my life it was. But it was a really cool experience and I was very glad to be a part of it.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I also watched a couple movies.
What movies?
I can talk about really quick. On the plane, actually. So first I watched a movie called Annihilation. Have either of you
Ooh,
seen this movie?
Cool movie.
Yeah, that was a cool movie. It was pretty weird, but I liked it.
Real weird movie.
Yeah, real weird movie. It was like a movie that kind of challenges criticism. I was reading some reviews of it, people who were very frustrated by it. So mm-hmm. this movie is directed by, I'm forgetting his name, but he's the same guy who made Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, yeah.
And it stars,
which I liked better personally, but Annihilation
same,
is cool.
Yeah, this was more almost like a music video or something. Like, it didn't fully... It's based on a book as well, and I gather it's a very, very loose adaptation. Yeah. I haven't read the book. So anyways, Natalie Portman plays this ex-military doctor, you know, or biologist, sorry. And then she and this group of women, it's also got Tessa Thompson in it and Gina Rodriguez. Gina Rodriguez is like hard as a motherfucker in this game or in this movie, and it's extremely entertaining. Anyways, they go in and there's this crazy alien stuff that happens, and I won't get into it because it kind of defies explanation. But it's one of those movies that does not explain itself or even have internal logic, and that's almost the point. Mm-hmm. And yet I found it very... engaging, especially just sitting there on a plane watching it. There are some pretty gross scenes in it.
Yeah, there's some scenes that on a plane you'd be looking around being like, sorry everyone. Sorry about this graphic horror movie I'm watching.
Yeah, this is not porn on your laptop.
No, instead it's just innards.
There are some there are some scenes where they're like getting under people's skin and stuff. And then just really briefly, also on the plane I watched that movie The Martian, which I think is like one of my favorite comfort food movies to just watch because it's just like nice people working together to solve problems, and there's something about watching that and I really like the music to that movie too, but I could watch The Martian at any time. I haven't read the book, but the movie is
great. Can I also just quickly say I saw Mary Queen of Scots this weekend too, and that movie was super, super good.
Oh yeah, okay, nice
history. It was probably more historical fiction than actually based in reality at all. I'm pretty sure Mary Queen of Scots wasn't that progressive in real life, but I enjoyed the fan fiction that they wrote about her, painting her as like a progressive pro-queer heroine. I was like, sure, I'll go with this. It's a really fun movie. I enjoyed it a lot.
Alright, we have to wrap things up. I was going to talk about football a little bit, but I'll save that for next time. Don't worry. We'll get plenty of football talk. Do not worry.
There's enough time for that.
All right.
Kirk, give us your music pick before we say goodbye.
I will. I'll do this one quick. This is actually the subject of this week's Strong Songs, which is a podcast that everyone listening to this should go and subscribe to on Apple Podcasts or Google Play. Everyone's been really cool about Strong Songs so far, which has been very fun. This is the third episode. And for this episode, I decided to go with a very strong song by Beyoncé, and it is her smash 2008 single, Single Ladies. So let's listen to a clip of that right now. I got gloves on my lips, a man on my hips, keep me tied in my Darion jeans. Acting up, drinking my cup, I can care less what you think. I need no permission, did I mention? Don't pay him any attention. Cause you had your turn, and now you're gonna learn what it really feels like to miss me. Cause if you like it, then you should have put a ring on it. So everybody knows this song, but I don't know. I mean, you'll have to get my full thoughts, go listen to the Strong Songs episode. But what's wild about this song is it's the most tense fucking song. It's so tense, it like never resolves, and it's so much more rhythmically weird than I had thought it was before I sat down with it. And the intro to this song is confusing. There are a couple points where they add two beats and flip the beat around, and so you're not actually sure where the downbeat is for a minute. And it's as groovy as it is and as killing as it is to dance to it, and everyone loves dancing to it. It really kind of is happy to pull the rug out from under you and just be very tense and like unresolved, which sort of makes sense because it's like about this very tense thing and this like tension in a relationship.
That's interesting.
It's an amazing song though. So yeah, go listen to that.
Yeah, give it. That's a teaser for Strong Songs. So go check out Strong Songs if you want to hear
great song.
All about Beyonce.
Queen
B herself. All right, cool. So that is it for this week's episode. Maddie Myers, thank you for agreeing to come and join us every single week from now on.
Yeah,
we're so
excited.
It's going
to be a lot of fun. I know that people are very stoked. People will be very stoked when they find out that you joined the show. So we will all be back next week. I believe next week we are starting our Game of the Year conversations. Stay tuned for more info on what that will actually look like. Mm-hmm. And of course, Maddie will be on the show next week and every
deciding
week from here on.
Deciding the Games of the Year.
Yeah, except we don't really decide Games of the Year. So as you'll learn, as you go on and get to know here our split screen habits. So that is it for this week. Kirk, Maddie, farewell. See you all next week.
Bye.
See you next week, guys.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mufidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR Now, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope you leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at Kotaku.com/splitscreen or email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.